Welcome to Divorce Explained, the podcast where we answer your questions and navigate the process of divorce together. Sharing real stories and personal experiences, this is your guide through it all. With your hosts, family law specialist Steve Benmore and divorce lawyer and strategist Leanne Townsend.
Social media and divorce. Is that oil and water?
I think it can be. I think it probably is. And it's something I was just saying before you came on it, you know, years ago, it wasn't an issue because we didn't have social media. And now it's very much a live issue. So that's what we're here to talk about today.
And for our viewers, man, can we go in so many different directions with social media. And I am totally open and going into whatever directions you want. So for the benefit of our viewers, if you want to ask us a question, type it into the chat box and we'll do our best to answer it. But let's just jump in. There's the subject of social media and divorce leading to the direction of people deciding to split up as a result of what they are reading on social media. And so, Leanne, this is one of those weeks where you are the expert on the subject. I am so not, but I'll pass it on to you.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, what you just raised is certainly something that could happen. People find out that their partner is, lying to them about things, perhaps cheating or whatever it might be through social media, through a post that comes up. It never ceases to amaze me that people post some of these things that, you know, they should know that if someone finds out, there's going to be a problem, but they post it nonetheless. So it definitely can be something that is the source of why parties break up. It's also something that, you know, comes up, I think, with our clients. And I know I've certainly had situations where either a client of mine or their ex has posted things on social media that either may not be appropriate. They're saying things about their ex, sharing with, you know, the general public stuff that's going on in their divorce. And so, it's not really appropriate to do that sort of thing. But also just sharing things that could end up being a problem. I've had cases where somebody is claiming they don't have any money, you know, it's a support payer, and they're talking about how strapped they are. And then, you know, they've posted something about their luxurious vacation or the expensive sports car they bought or things like that. And so people really should be mindful of what they're posting. Have you had any experiences with clients, Steve, and social media issues?
So I'm going to take what you just described, which there are a number of shelves that it falls on. So then there's the social media post whereby someone learns about a behavior of their spouse that causes them to want to split up. Then there's the social media post of people that are separated already, whereby what they are posting online differs from the evidence that they're giving in court. So for example, they might say that they have financial hardship and that they cannot pay child or spousal support. But then on the flip side, they are traveling and driving nice cars and wearing nice clothes on social media. And then they're the same exact issue, but the reverse version. The person that says, I can't work, I therefore require support, while what they're showing on social media is them having a blast with their lives at the expense of the person that's paying them support instead of them working. So where am I going with this? What's the evidentiary value of these social media posts? Well, let's go to the first example that I just used. The cause of the separation was the spouse learning that their ex-spouse or their then spouse was, for example, cheating on them. Okay, well, in Canada, conduct is not relevant to the subject of support. So the fact that there might be evidence that could confirm adultery might serve as a ground to be able to establish the right to a divorce. But for the most part, it's very unlikely that the actual sexual act of adultery is online. There might be a lot of innuendo, but not necessarily enough to establish adultery. So in a situation like that, the evidentiary value is very low, and we would otherwise just use the one-year separation in order to establish the right to divorce. In the other two examples, we have a situation where there is a legal determination of either the right to spousal support or the right to, or the obligation to pay spousal support. And that may involve evidence that could be gleaned from social media posts with respect to what people are doing during the day, for example, not working, or alternatively, how people are spending their money when in fact they're claiming that they don't have the money to spend. And so we have seen, as a result of this volcanic eruption of social media activity, a significant amount of social media material being presented to judges for judges to review and consider when it comes to them making decisions with respect to these sorts of issues, provided, of course, it deals with one of the legal issues that the judge has to decide. And so, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I can certainly say that I don't think judges take kindly to people who post negative things about their spouse on social media. The only issue I could see it going to that's a legal issue is maybe a parenting issue, you know, suggestions that there could be alienation going on or something like that. But certainly if your spouse produces, you know, copies of posts that you've made where you are saying very derogatory things about them, that's not going to portray you in a very good light should you end up in court.
Correct. And in fact, even though inflammatory, derogatory, and abusive social media postings don't really result in a change in property division or child or spousal support, it certainly can affect parenting rights. And quite frankly, when someone behaves that way and posts such negative material about their ex-spouse online, judges feel inclined to punish the person that's doing it, and they will find a way to weave that into their decision. And so one of the things that I recommend to my clients is stop posting online until your divorce is settled. And in fact, quite the contrary, go back to your social media accounts and start deleting anything that might otherwise be disadvantageous or compromising. And so I would prefer to have a client with no social media account or no social media postings than to have to start defending and explaining why they wrote what they wrote.
No, I totally agree with that. And I think that one of the problems that I think people run into is that sometimes it can be cathartic or healing to share your story, particularly if you've been in an abusive relationship. I know for a lot of people in that situation, part of the healing is, you know, sharing the story and feeling validated and heard, because in the relationship, perhaps they were, you know, gaslit all the time, or they didn't feel validated and heard. But again, if that's something that you're wanting to do, you should, if you're going to do it, you should wait until the divorce is finalized, not be doing it in the middle of proceedings. And as well, just from a parenting standpoint, you should always be mindful of your children. So if you share children with this other party, they may have done some horrible things to you. And quite rightly, you're upset about them. But at the end of the day, they are your children's other parent. And so you need to ask yourself, do I really need to go on social media and share what this person did to me and share what a horrible person they were to me? How is that going to impact my children if their friends and their friends' parents see my posts and they know that this went on about the other parent did this to me? And are the children going to be embarrassed? And is it going to make them uncomfortable? Are they going to be teased or bullied at school? And so I think you really seriously need to ask yourself those types of questions before going ahead and making any sort of post about your ex on social media, even if it's post-divorce.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. You see, the thing is with social media is there are certain postings that can stay there forever, and others that disappear right away, for example, on Snapchat. So, you know, you last thing you want is to cause damage to your reputation or your children's reputation within their peers. And you also don't want other people to side with your ex-spouse because they think that the way you're conducting yourself is inappropriate. It's a lot better to be silent and mysterious than to be vocal and considered to be the monster. And so social media posts have opened up the door, like you just said, Leanne, to people using it as their daily diary, where they get to rant and complain about certain things. And of course, when you're going through a divorce, it's just too attractive to be able to tell all your friends how horrible your spouse is or what she did or he did to your children. And furthermore, to brag about how you're past it and showing all these amazing things that you're doing, hoping, of course, that your spouse or their circle of friends will catch wind of it and be jealous of you. None of that ever achieves the goal that it wants, because even if it's entirely all true that you have moved on and you're doing well, you still haven't settled your divorce yet. And the angry spouse who is looking at this may decide to drag out the divorce longer and cost you more money in the end. So you don't want that. So I think, Leanne, and you and I are on the same page here, where we're telling our clients the same thing, which is lay low on social media, get through your divorce, don't be foolish and post anything that's inappropriate, incorrect, or slanderous, and listen to your lawyer's advice about behaving appropriately throughout the time that we're trying to help you arrive at a peaceful and reasonable divorce settlement.
Definitely. Now, to take this topic in a slightly different direction, there's the whole idea or concept of social media and lawyers, because we're here right now on social media. Steve and I are, you know, we do this every week. And so as lawyers, we're using social media to communicate information to, you know, members of the public, potentially our clients, potentially people, you know, that don't know us at all. And, you know, social media has become a marketing instrument and or an instrument as well, just to communicate information, share information, educate people. And so, you know, lots of lawyers and law firms have had to realize that they need to be on social media in 2022. As part of their branding and you know, as a marketing tool. So, Steve, what are your, you know, thoughts on, you know, lawyers using social media? There's, you know, wide range of things that I've seen. I've seen, you know, lawyers on TikTok dancing and singing. I've seen, you know, lawyers on TikTok, like you have a great, I've seen your TikToks and they're great. Like they're just informational and you're not doing any dancing or singing. And I don't know, you know, whether, you know, what your thoughts are on, you know, that is a tool, but just generally, what are your thoughts on lawyers using social media as a tool in their business?
Well, you know, social media is a communication device and it allows us lawyers to do what we love doing, which is to educate people and to help people make better choices. So whether we, you know, 30 years ago wrote articles in a newspaper as a contributing editor, or we appeared in public spaces and gave workshops. And today's version of that is social media or various different platforms like our Divorce Explained podcast. These are all tools that allow us to help people. And so I certainly wouldn't want people to think that lawyers who communicate via social media are doing anything inappropriate. However, Leanne, you and I are very careful to be very clear with our listeners that we are not giving advice and we're also not disclosing anything personal about any of our clients, either their identity or their cases. And so the information that we give is generic, it's helpful, it's valuable. And from the feedback that we've received, both from fellow lawyers and from clients and non-clients alike, has been very positive. Now, there are limitations. There are lawyers, certainly more in the US than here, that will use the platform to criticize judges or the judicial system. They'll use it to criticize other lawyers. And in some cases, they'll even criticize the other parties. None of that is acceptable. And quite frankly, in Ontario and many other parts of the US and Commonwealth countries, that sort of behavior may attract the sanctions of the law society or whatever the regulatory body is, because lawyers have an obligation to maintain respect for the legal profession and for the legal system. And so if we say or do anything that derogates or diminishes the respect that society has in the legal system, we have done damage to the very profession that has given us the privilege of helping people. So we are very careful to take our roles in social media or anywhere else where people listen to us very seriously, to convey information, not legal advice, and to ensure that we abide by the very strict standards of professionalism, collegiality, and respect for the institutions that we represent.
I totally agree. And one of the things I actually love about social media is that it has allowed me to connect with members of the public who are out there that, you know, I wouldn't otherwise necessarily come to contact with, but it allows us to establish on some level a relationship with them. And I know a lot of people out there, you know, sometimes they find lawyers intimidating, and even when they're going through a separation and they need to find a lawyer and they don't know, you know, where to even begin. What I've found with social media is that it's allowed people who follow me to get to know me. They can get a sense of, you know, whether I seem knowledgeable about what I'm talking about, whether I admit, you know, that I'm trustworthy, or they feel that there's some trust in what I'm saying. And it helps make me less intimidating than I otherwise might be if people didn't have that exposure. And so I think that it can be really helpful to people out there, you know, that way, to kind of demystify, I guess, lawyers, make us seem more approachable, because most of us are very approachable. I think that that's a really good thing for people.
I agree. And I'll tell you, just to build on your last point, Leanne, as a result of COVID and the move to virtual work, or hybrid work, or remote work, we've had a very large number of clients retain us who have never met us live. And social media is offered the opportunity for people to really feel like they know their lawyer, because they can see them, whether it's through Zoom direct, or whether it's through something like this, where they get to watch us speak after the fact, and they like what they see, and they respect the way we communicate and think and deliver and present. And so in the era of post-COVID, where so many of us are working virtually and clients are not driving to lawyers' offices, social media has actually somewhat filled the gap left by people not having live meetings.
Definitely. It's been a huge, I think, asset. And what I noticed is when COVID began, because I was on social media before that, it's a tool that I've used for a while, but I noticed when COVID hit and everyone was working remotely, I think social media became even more important at that time for businesses as a way to connect with people. And so I noticed in the legal profession, there were a lot more lawyers embracing social media who before that it kind of maybe looked down on it, or thought that, you know, they still preferred the print advertisements or things like that, rather than trying out social media. There was maybe a little bit of a stigma about it because it was newer. But, you know, I noticed, as they say, during COVID, a lot of law firms and lawyers that I had not seen on social media before suddenly were there, and they're still here. So they've realized that it is a great tool. And there's great information that you know, not just in law. I mean, you can get great information on any number of topics through social media. And so I think it's better for the public to, you know, if there's a situation that they would like to get some information on, they don't want to have to go pay a lawyer for something, that they could just look up one of our podcasts or, you know, join one of our lives and hear some information on the topic.
Absolutely. Well, we use social media to discuss social media. And that's it for this week.
Yes. Thanks, everybody. See you again next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Divorce Explained. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to head on over to Instagram and follow at Steve Benmore and at Leanne Townsend Life for more. And if you're looking for specific divorce services, you can visit benmore.com and leannetownsend.ca. We hope today's episode made you feel informed and inspired as you move along through your divorce journey. Tune in next week for Divorce Explained.